This is the first of our two exclusive KGEZ Good Morning Show drill downs made possible by Dent Magic to Washington, D.C. and Linda Kenyon.
Good morning, Linda.
Well, good morning to you. I woke up with the horrifying feeling today that I thought it was Friday, but it was not. So that's how my day is going.
Why do you say horrified?
Because I was hoping it was Friday, only to realize a split second later that it was not.
Yeah, it's like, what happened on Thursday? Oh, no, we got to do that still. Well, what do you have? What do you have on the news scope for us this morning?
Oh, it's these past couple of days have been a blur, but we have foreign aid bills is going to come to the House floor in the form of three separate bills, possibly four. And because the House has certain rules that apparently they choose to follow at this time, there is something called the 72-hour rule, and that means legislation cannot be voted on until it's been out there for all to read for at least 72 hours. So that puts all of us in on Saturday for coverage of the House voting on the foreign aid bills, and they are one bill that will fund Ukraine, one for Israel, one for Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific. And then there'll probably be a fourth bill, which would target other national security priorities. For example, a ban on TikTok, sanctions against Russia, China, and Iran. And as if that's not enough, in order to appease conservatives who demanded a vote on the border security bill as a standalone bill, there will be a vote on a border security bill as a standalone bill, separate from the foreign aid bills, that will include some of what were considered to be the core components of the border security bill that House Republicans approved last year. But the Senate said this was more policy and less more politics than policy, and didn't go anywhere in the Senate. The Senate passed its own, and the House refused to take it up. So here we go, the ping-ponging action back and forth between one House of Congress and the other.
Linda, there will be debate on each of these four bills. Does debate really change anybody's mind anymore?
You know, I have to say, as a wonk who listens very carefully to these debates, it's very interesting to me to hear both sides debate. And like, I may come in with certain beliefs and understandings about what the bill stands for, but then you hear somebody make an argument, you go, "Huh, that's a pretty good argument." And then the person on the opposite side says something, and you go, "Huh, that's a pretty good argument too." But you know, yeah, I don't think it really changes any minds. I think people go in with their minds made up, and some of us who studied the speech can look upon it as historic, et cetera, and everybody else may be not looking at it quite so much, or not understanding the historic value, or not really caring.
Okay, now you mentioned there's like a 72-hour window after the bill is introduced before they can vote on it or take action. Are they going to introduce all four of these at the same time so the clock is ticking simultaneously?
No, they'll do one at a time, and they'll reset the clock for debate on each one. These bills will go to the House Rules Committee before they hit the floor, and the House Rules Committee will decide the rules of debate. For example, it might be an hour on each side for debate, following by what they call ordering the question, motions to table, et cetera, and so forth, to go through all the processes and procedures. But they will be taking them up each separately, and we will get the rules of the debate before it hits the floor. Well,
okay, now, you know, this is almost mind-numbing, the stuff that you mentioned, the steps they go through, because we...
Almost?
Yeah, we see the argument. Is this a good process, though?
Well, you know, I mean, this is what the founders devised. This is how the democratic process is supposed to work. You're supposed to have debate. You're supposed to follow certain rules. You're supposed to have certain decorum and respect. And sometimes it works that way.
Okay.
And so the thing is Ukraine is in dire need of an answer. Are we going to help them or aren't we? If we are going to help them, they need the bullets and they need the armaments just as quickly as we can get them to them. If we're not going to help them, then they got to try to figure something else out.
Yeah, well, they haven't been looking at just the United States of America for help. There has been help from Britain, there has been help from France, there's been help from various other countries, but the United States has been the largest contributor to Ukraine's cause in the fight to repel the Russian invasion. So, yes, Ukraine desperately needs U.S. help. A former national security advisor during the Obama administration spoke out earlier today, and she said, you know, Ukraine is in dire need, that Russia is about to overrun Ukraine, and if Russia overruns Ukraine, it's not going to stop there. So, yeah, Ukraine desperately needs this money, desperately needs U.S. help. You know, it's been several months now since the U.S. got caught up in its own internal issues before it would even discuss bringing up a Ukraine bill in the House. And let's couple the layers of complication to this mix with House Republican of Georgia, Marjorie Taylor Greene, saying that if House Speaker Mike Johnson brings a Ukraine aid bill to the floor, she will pull the trigger on her motion to vacate. She does not want Ukraine aid at all. She wants border security. Border security will be moved as a separate bill, but she is very much opposed to helping Ukraine.
Now, was it that Donald Trump was not able to talk her out of this, or what?
Well, this, you know, depends upon whom you ask. Some Democrats and the Biden administration as well have been accusing Marjorie Taylor Greene of using the Russian propaganda talking points, that she's a tool of Russia, that President Biden... you know, it's all about trying to defeat President Biden in November, and that former President Trump is giving her the marching orders. So, you know, I guess the truth will come out at some point. I'm sure that Marjorie Taylor Greene denies all of those allegations. But nonetheless, those are some of the arguments that have been swirling around in the air up on Capitol Hill.
Well, yesterday, the Senate just basically put a stop to the Mayorkas impeachment. I mean, just dead stop right there.
Yeah, the Senate received the articles of impeachment that were delivered from the House. By the way, the House impeached the Homeland Security Secretary weeks ago, and only now transmitted the articles of impeachment this week. And they said that he was not doing his job, that he betrayed the American trust by not enforcing or even following, if you will, the law regarding border security, et cetera. Mayorkas, Democrats, and the Biden administration said none of this was his fault, that it was just a political and policy disagreement with Mayorkas, but that there were no high crimes or misdemeanors, which is the exact wording, by the way, in an impeachment. And so they basically said, look, if you had passed the border security bill that the Senate passed and it just even put it on the floor and agreed to even debate it, then you would have had a leg to stand on. But you didn't do that, they said to Republicans, because you just wanted a political issue that would make Biden look bad and Trump could use it to campaign on in the presidential campaign. So the Senate, which is run by Democrats as the majority, as opposed to the House, which has a Republican majority. The Senate received the articles of impeachment, went through the process of swearing in the senators as members of the jury to hear the trial, and then immediately dispensed with both articles of impeachment, saying they had no basis in fact, and that Mayorkas did not warrant a trial, which of course got many Republicans very upset, saying, for example, Mitch McConnell, the Senate's top Republican, saying it doesn't matter if you don't think that Mayorkas should have been impeached. He was impeached, and that compels us to hold a trial. But they did not hold a trial. They dismissed it. Well, leaving Mayorkas, by the way, as one of only two cabinet members ever to be impeached by the House since 1876.
I noticed that the Senate bill, that vote went right down party lines.
It did. It did. And which, you know, there was one Republican in the first of the two articles of impeachment that they turned back who abstained. and that was Senator Murkowski of Alaska. But nonetheless, she did vote along party lines in the second vote on the second article of impeachment. And in both cases, they were dismissed, and there has been no trial and will be no trial to be held regarding the impeachment slash trial of Alejandro Mayorkas.
There are a lot of people who all the way along this whole process of the 2024 campaign have said, look, we want a different set of candidates. We don't want a rerun of 2020 in 2024. Yet that appears to be what we're getting. However, there are some independent and third-party candidates out there that could potentially throw a monkey wrench into all this.
That is true, and one of them is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's running as an independent presidential candidate. And a lot of Democrats in particular, and Joe Biden certainly, are concerned that with the name Kennedy, he could siphon off a lot of Democratic votes and skew the election in favor of Donald Trump. Well, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s policies are in many ways not Democratic at all, are more Republican, and sometimes are hard to even define. And his own family members in Philadelphia today, in about 2 hours or so, maybe three, the president is going to be attending an event with several members of the Kennedy family. And the Kennedy family is endorsing Joe Biden and saying, do not vote for our family member, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He is not the president that we want. His policies have nothing to do with the Kennedy family. And the name Kennedy is being basically trounced, if you will, through this candidacy.
And they can't talk any sense into RFK Jr.?
Apparently, they feel that they cannot, which is why they're having this event today, to say, don't vote for our member of our family.
Okay, now we are all familiar with Robert F. Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy. Now, Jr., though, has he held political office before?
I believe he served in Congress a while back. And then when he left Congress, he became a bit of an activist on Venezuelan oil, for example, to lower oil prices. But, of course, the U.S. has some problems with Venezuela. But then he also became an anti-vaxxer, very outspoken anti-vaxxer. He had a number of other policy issues that, again, do not hone to the Democratic philosophies and or talking points.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can write these guys off, but I want to go back to the year 2000, and Ralph Nader took enough votes away from Al Gore in Michigan to put Florida totally in play. And we know what happened there. It took the Supreme Court to decide who was going to be our next president of the United States.
That's right. Third-party candidates can change the outcome, and not in the way that perhaps even they had hoped.
Hmm. Linda, as always, we appreciate your great reporting, and thank you for drilling down for us this morning.
Well, thank you. You have a great day. Tomorrow is Friday, so we'll talk tomorrow.
Okay.